This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
We have to take some responsibility as well and stop allowing these outside influences and make and declare the decision that I am going to build wealth with my family. You don't have to work together in the same business. You just have to be in the business of working together.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning into another wonderful episode of the Color of Money podcast. I am excited today and selfishly because we have a powerhouse woman on the panel today. I'm excited about that because we've had some really, really strong leaders and multimillionaire developers and a lot lately. And I was telling our producers, I want to talk to some more women that do this. And someone introduced us to a lady named Lavaysha Davis. And I'm so glad they did because she is that powerhouse woman I was looking for. She is a dedicated mother of four and a passionate wealth advisor. She helps families achieve their goals, their financial goals and wealth building and all of that great stuff. But I really want her to tell you what she does because it's something unique that we haven't had on this podcast a lot lately, where she is an actual wealth advisor and helps people build wealth through a certain kind of setup that she's got going on that she's going to talk to us about. I'm joined, of course, by my co-hosts, Bowman Keady and Emmerich Peace. Unk is on the call today. We're missing Daniel, but I would love for you, Lavaysha, in his absence, if you could just get started and tell us exactly who you are and what it is that you do.
Absolutely. Thank you, Julia, for that warm introduction. It was so joyful. Thank you for that with that beautiful smile. And I'm happy to be on the Color of Money podcast. But I am Lavaysha Davis, and I am a private wealth advisor for LOS Advisors. It's a wealth management firm that builds out fractional family offices for entrepreneurs and first generation wealth creators. And if you aren't familiar with the family office model, it's the underutilized concept that can really transform your scattered finances and efforts to build wealth into a thriving wealth and legacy operation. So I'm excited to get into what that is and how it works and how it could benefit, you know, these thriving creators that's already existing in this powerful time.
I'm super excited digging this because I think sort of the idea of family offices has become this thing that's out there used in so many different contexts and oftentimes misunderstood by many people, especially those that aren't exposed to it in a typical scenario. So I'm excited about digging that. But maybe just to start off, can you tell us a little bit about how you came to this career and this profession and what your journey was to the work you do today?
Oh, man, of course. I mean, first off, it was a divine redirection. It wasn't like a dream of mine as a kid to be sitting in front of you all as a wealth advisor. I actually wanted to go to medical school, and I went to the Ohio State University studying biology. However, two things happened. One, my husband, who was an entrepreneur at heart as college students, broke college students. That was not like the ideal time to be entrepreneurs. It was way before, you know, we had the resources that we have now. So in an effort to support his dreams, I participated in startups. You know, he would start a business and we struggled quite a bit with the learning curve. I took some, had some major lessons, and through it, I just found I needed to learn the money side. That was really what was where we were lacking. So that combined with some tragedy in my family, unfortunately, my brother, my only brother, was a victim of violence. And it was a very devastating moment for my family because my mother, who was a single mother, didn't have the resources to bury him. So it just became this eye-opening situation. Not only did she not individually, my brother didn't have his affairs in order, but even as we were standing there as a family with our eyes wide open of what we were going to do, just was a clear reflection of where we stood as a family. So between my entrepreneur experience and just seeing devastation hit my family the way that it did, I just kind of decided to take this bull by the horns and kind of pursue financial licenses from there and just traveled a very non-traditional route into financial services and wealth management. And that's what brought me here today.
I would love to start out with this idea of what is a fractional family office?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first thing, there are different forms of family office, but let me talk about what family office means. Yeah. I like to call it like the centralized wealth hub center. as those that's pursuing wealth, as you're really trying to build something for your family, you're going to find that there are multiple components to it. You know, like, oh, I have to think about taxes. I have to think about investing. Or if I start a business, I have to think about the exit. Or I have to think about how to get this wealth from my hands to my children. And all of it starts to sound like womp, 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 like Charlie Brown after a while. So the family office is a way to centralize that all in one place where your ultimate goals is the primary focus of all professionals involved. The tax strategists or planners, the CPAs or the estate planning attorneys, or the accountants or the corporate attorneys or the investment advisors, they're not in their individual corners. They're all at one, I like to say, round table, strategizing to keep your plan working congruently instead of in conflict. So that's what the family office model is. It's been coined by earlier the Rockefellers, who originally had the idea or created the concept of all their professionals working together, because they saw their business as a part of their portfolio, not like their one-all be-all. So they just wanted it managed like a portfolio. So that's the whole thing of a family office, but there's different kinds for different levels. You can have...
Well, explain that, because when you said, when we introduced and said that you did family offices, Bo got excited. His eyes lit up. He was like, oh yeah, let's talk about this. And to be honest, I've never heard of it. This is the first time I've ever heard of it. But obviously you've heard of it before, Bo. So that was a great explanation. But is this something that a lot of people are doing?
It is not. It's been reserved for those that are worth $50 million or more. It's typically who it services. But when we say fractional, that's where we can start to incorporate it at different levels.
Okay, I cut you off. Let's hear about fractional. Okay. So I'm at fractional, honey. I want to talk about fractional. Okay.
You might think that you never know. You never know. You got to get some outside eyes on it. But you can have a fully built out family office where all of these professionals are basically employed by your family enterprise, and they solely work for you and service your financial needs. They service all of the investment planning, all of the succession planning, all the philanthropic planning, all under one roof.
I always think of it as like, at some point, at the level of a Rockefellers, it's basically having a business, a group of people whose only job is to manage the overall wealth and affairs of a family. And so we're talking about, how do you chunk size that down for someone who may not be able to just have, you know, 10 people sitting around to manage their billions? We're talking about how we bring that access to folks that are on their wealth journey earlier.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. That describes that fully built out family office. Exactly. When you start to break it down, it's where you start to allocate responsibilities. For example, when we say fractional, we manage the investment components and all of the coordinated planning. So we do the investment management, but we include, hey, who is your CPA? Who is your attorney? Who is your insurance provider or agent or advisor? So when we invest, we are investing in the purpose to being aligned with those professionals. If we're trying to minimize your taxes, if we're trying to create wealth transfer, we're working with your estate planning attorney. So we're like the wealth quarterbacks. That's the fractional part where we just coordinate everything again to keep it in alignment, because conflicted advice can be extremely costly along the journey, especially if the goal is to build multi-generational wealth, which is a little different than just individual financial security. Security and success.
Can you tell us a little bit about, if you had to put it into buckets, like if you said, like, you know, assume we had, let's start with like what the ideal huge family office was and how you pull that back to fractional. What would be the main core, like, components or pillars that a family office would have, so that as people are thinking about how you guys operate in a fractional way, they could think about who are the people that have to be at the table to create that coordinated strategy?
Yeah. So if we had to break it down into buckets, it probably wouldn't be many. It's driven by two things, like the investments and the income. Now, you may have professionals that service the income bucket, multiple professionals there, and you only may have a set of investment advisors service the investment bucket. So it wouldn't be into many from that component. There will be a third one, estate planning. That would be the three buckets: investments, income, and estate planning. Now, you may not have a family or a fractional family office dedicated to just those other two buckets. That's where the fractional part comes in. Either you're dedicated to just investments or you're kind of doing it all.
And the tax would fall under one of those?
Correct. That's where the income comes in. The income and the investments.
Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. Because they have different planning strategies for each one. How you're currently making your active income versus your investments, which may be over a longer period of time.
Can we use me as an example? Because these guys have big money. They got first family thing you talked about. They got the family, that part. Let's use me. Okay, as an example. So okay. I would come to you because, so I have a financial advisor. He's been on our podcast before. His name is Kylie. Kylie probably unwillingly and unknowingly is doing your job as like helping be the quarterback. He did not sign up for that, but I don't know. It's too many fragmented pieces because then I'll be like, I don't know. Call my accountant. I don't know. Is that what they said? And I have him running all around trying to ask people because they're telling me different things. Well, my accountant mm-hmm. said this. And Kylie's like, well, ask them this. And then we're all over the place. And then I'm like, how about we all get on a Zoom call, right? Which they don't want to do, right? So what you're saying is if we had somebody like a Levation, what you do with your company is you help to really coordinate and organize and, like you said, quarterback all of that.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we do. We do meet regularly with professionals in pursuit of what the objectives are for this particular financial plan. If we are trying to produce a certain amount of returns, if we're trying to produce a certain amount of income, if we are trying to transfer a certain amount of wealth, whatever we're trying to do, we all talk together. We are all on those Zooms, and it's a requirement in order for this to work properly.
I think the biggest lesson I've learned in this whole exercise is that as you are, the typical entrepreneur starts out and they are just excited to have a business and they're passionate about what they're doing and they're working 24 hours a day and they're throwing everything together. There is huge value. I'm going to say it for myself. Huge. I wish I learned this stuff when I was starting because I would have set my business up completely differently. I would have done things so different. And I have seen the pain, like personally, you know, my father came here from Africa. I was an educator. He's not a wealthy man, but did a lot of really good things and hustled to provide for his family. And when he died, all the things that I knew were values for my father that he wanted to pass on were threatened because he hadn't set his life up the right way. And I've seen it myself as an entrepreneur. God forbid you actually be successful in the thing you're doing. And you didn't think about any of this stuff starting out. So I would encourage any listener who's listening to this and going, oh, I'm not at a place for a family office. You're actually the ones who need to listen to this because you need to be learning from the guests we have today. And even if it doesn't apply to you today, it's going to actually apply to you today because the principle applies to you, whether you have $100 million investments or $500 investments, or whether you make $10 million or you make $100,000.
Because today, if I had an idea, you know, 30 years ago, 35 years ago, that I would be in the place that I am now, my life would be different. And so many times we judge our insides by other people's outsides. We think we're looking at what we think we see, and it's not really what we see. And then when you have somebody like Levation, they're able to break this whole financial picture down. What you really understand is you're no different than them. You're just at a different measure on the stick. And it's all the same thing. It's all money at the end of the day. It's just a lower level of money. And when you put people like this in your place, it gives you the ability to raise higher on the stick than you ever thought you would because you got a damn plan, which most of us did not have a real plan, present party included.
What has been the common part of the conversation or what you all mentioned is we're thinking about it individually. Me as a new business owner or someone who's just starting out. And what I really want people to understand is that your family is your God-given team to build wealth. So when you have that individual perspective about you're missing out on very valuable resources. Any wealthy family, there has been an eye at some point in time. But what was different with them is they took their eye to a we because they know they're stronger with human capital. Oh, let's work collectively. Your family is a business. That's the first business that you have naturally. So whether you think you're individually prepared because of where you are financially, you're not calculating correctly because there's other people to consider, whether that is, you know, the family that you created on your own or maybe family that you created along your journey. But there is an opportunity for us to maximize on this concept with the resources that we have right now. We just have to change our perspective. Family enterprise is the backbone to multi-generational wealth, not individual acts. When we see that, when we change our mind about that and realize that, oh, we have to focus more on family enterprises, just a little data sheet in there that family enterprises contribute about 70% to the GDP, just family enterprises alone. So it's a fact in a blueprint that if we really want to create wealth in our family or political influence or economic stability, we're going to get there a lot further together. So I would just encourage the removal of where you are and evaluate where we are and how can we make progress.
I don't want to jump ahead because I know we're laying the foundation here, but you said something when you started that's coming up here again, which you said you specialize in first generation wealth creators. And there's a lot of research. There's a lot of stuff that's been done on the pressures in first generation wealth creators. In our podcast, we've talked a lot about what you just said, this idea that the concept, the societal paradigm, especially for our people, is that it is an individual success that breaks a cycle of poverty, that this individual from this, you know, downtrodden community that had nobody who was nothing, didn't have any supports or resources, rose from the ashes and created this great thing. And that's the story we tell. And for people who are successful in our community, it's a very appealing, seductive, and addictive story. But it's really a false story because there's nobody that went out and succeeded that didn't have a grandma who helped them or a teacher that believed in them or uncle down the street or the somebody, bus driver who picked them up. People had a community that actually invested them. And usually our family is one of the most powerful pieces that we move with. And so I just want to re-underscore this idea that actual wealth is not an individual exercise. And I'm interested in your work with first generation wealth creators. What you've seen are some of the biggest mindset shifts that are challenging to make this shift from being an individual producer and contributor into the creator of an enterprise that creates a legacy.
Great point, Bo, to point out. You are absolutely, no one is self-made. I know it sounds great. No one is self-made. From my own personal experience, the reason why I've been able to follow my divine purpose is because of my mother. And this was also practicing building family wealth. Again, my mother, she didn't have retirement. You know, she was raising four kids. She didn't plan for her future that way. So when it was time, when God got to calling and doors got to opening, I have four children of my own. And it was a difficult decision as a mother. Like, do I follow this or do I stay here? My children are still young. They need me. Mm-hmm. But then it clicked like, hey, you know what? My mother doesn't have a retirement, but she's been a caregiver all of my life. You know, I'm going to retire my mother. And that money that I was going to have to spend outside of our personal family economy anyway, I will now pay that to my mother. Mm-hmm. And we circulate that. And now I can plan for her dollars accordingly because her money just flows back to the family enterprise and we can invest on her behalf. Utilizing your family is an imperative in more than one way. Another way where we see the transformation is through the tax planning. Mm. When those individuals do become, you know, start making all this money and they see that tax bill and it's like, hey, we have to distribute some of this income. And some members of your family may be in a lower tax bracket, so we may need to distribute it to them. But what can they do to contribute, to grow the value? Everybody has a certain skill. It may not be the skill that can help your business internally, but they have something. You know, your brother that's quick to flip the lid, maybe he needs to be security. I don't know. Your sister who maybe have her certain skill sets that she has, everybody has something that they can contribute. And then when we distribute that income, they're like, how can we do this more? You know, I like that. I like them being a part of this. Like, we're not working together, but they have a role. And it's about building out the roles. And that's where the transformation really starts to happen.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more. I love this idea and this concept, and I'm sad that Daniel's missing it because Daniel is, obvious as we know, an perfect example of this. Daniel runs the largest real estate team, like I said, in Denver, and he has a brokerage there, and he owns a franchise, and his family is the staff. You know, his cousin, his sisters, you know, his Daniel's a perfect example of this, as is Bo. But the Color of Money podcast is because we tend to have different challenges than maybe our white counterparts do sometimes. Mm-hmm. When I'm hearing this, I'm thinking, it sounds wonderful for the families who are functional, but in the mm-hmm. Black community, we have a lot of fractured families. And also mm-hmm. when we're talking family, our family structures are not necessarily, we have a lot of single women leading households. Predominantly in our Black community, single women are leading the households. And your mama's crazy, and your brother's a dope dealer, or he's all crackhead. Or, you know, what about the many Black families that are out there, that this concept is great, but it is just a concept because my family is not functional. We don't have a structured mm-hmm. family. I'm a single mother or whatever the challenge might be. How can people who are in those kind of family structures that still have a desire to build generational wealth, maybe for their children, how can they participate in this when your family either isn't there or they're dead or they're in jail or they are just somebody you wouldn't actually trust with your children, let alone your money, let alone, you know, how do we still use these concepts for the many Black households that are struggling with those challenges?
It's so many points I want to bring up. I hope I remember them all because there's a few things in there. Number one, that's not by accident. Because since family enterprise is the backbone to multi-generational wealth, the destruction of the family has directly contributed to why it's harder for us to build it. Marriage rates and wealth are directly correlated. We are on the lower end. So the higher end of, I believe right now, is even when we say our white counterparts, they're actually like number four. East Indian leads in marriage rates at about 96%, which means they lead in household income, median household income at about 104,000. While we're at the very bottom with about 33% marriage rates and an average household income of about 55,000. So as long as we allow the narrative that our families are dysfunctional and continue to allow the destruction of our family, this concept becomes harder and harder to achieve.
Correct. Yeah.
So we have to take some responsibility as well and stop allowing these outside influences and make and declare the decision that I am going to build wealth with my family. You don't have to work together in the same business. You just have to be in the business of working together.
That's good. Yeah.
You can bring in a third party. Let's think about it like this. If you all worked a traditional job, you had a 401k, the legal structure of a 401k is just a trust. That's the legal structure of it. And it's managed by a third party to grow your investments to produce the amount of income you need to last for the rest of your life. If that is the case, we don't have to work together in the same business, but what we're going to do is I'm going to contribute my X amount of dollars that I want to do to this external legal structure, a trust or a special purpose vehicle or some other type of LLC or legal structure. And it's managed by a third party to grow our investments so we can self-sustain our financial needs. When it's time for our parents to retire, we got that. When it's time for us to retire, we got that. When we have a medical emergency, we have that. We can be in conflict all day, but that don't have nothing to do with the third party that's managing it. And lastly, family doesn't always have to be by blood. It's who you have a direct affinity to. I like to use LeBron James as an example because he has created wealth within his circle with people that he had affinity with, that he grew up with and put them in powerful positions. Now they're operating collaboratively. The net worth of that group by the single leader deciding, I'm going to implement the people that I've grown love for, has drastically increased their net worth all the way around. So even if it's not your sister, your brother, your parents, your aunts, your uncles, we would love for it to be like that because in the spaces where these conversations are taking place, there's usually one last name all the way down. We would love for it to happen that way. But if it turns out to be your best friend or your kid's parent, your kid's best friend's parents, because you guys have known each other for 20 years, whatever that looks like, It's about collaborative effort. That's the focus, like removing individual, removing that it has to happen in a certain kind of way and just making solid decisions and organizing our resources. That's all it boils down to.
I believe a lot of times that's what we miss because we're so programmed that when we succeed at a certain level, that we have to drop people off instead of picking people up. And that whole idea of collaborative, I absolutely love it, particularly with your family, because my family actually worked with me. So my son worked with me. My daughter's a loan officer. She's working with me. So I love that idea that I just have to dig a lot more into. Maybe we can share some resources. I can share some resources differently with them, you know, to make this whole environment so much better. So I love that. So I absolutely have to have a conversation with you. Here's a question. Like when you say collaboratively, I'm thinking about this whole thing where you say you're bringing all these people under a roof because, you know, you may have a person who's as a wealth advisor, they're doing investments with you. And then you have a separate person who's doing insurances with you. Then you have a separate person that's providing a tax structure. So what I'm understanding is this collaboration is all of these people are in the room in a conversation at the same time so that I'm just going to use myself for example. I don't have to have five conversations. I can have one conversation and everybody understands it straight from the source. So there's no misinterpretation of what I may have said. Everybody understands the same conversation. Or sometimes you may not convey the information to your tax strategist that your wealth advisor, your investment advisor gave you, and there's no misinterpretation of what the context of the conversation was. Is that a good way to look at it?
That is absolutely right. Narrowing the conversation, because if the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, they can't lock fingers. Like, so we have to be able to lock fingers. An example, as the wealth advisor, I know your entire goals. I know all of them. I know when we want to retire. I know what type of income. I know how many kids. I know what you want your spouse to have. I want to know when you want to sell your business. I know all of this. So when we have the, what we call an investment policy statement that outlines these goals, that's what governs your investment decisions, because sometimes we get blinded by shiny object syndrome and we just start investing in things that just look good, sound good, presented well, but we have no parameters to make sure they're within. But if we, when we create that and I know what the long-term goals are and we say, well, maybe because you want to sell your business in this amount of time and you think you're going to get $25 million, $50 million for whatever you're growing your company to, well, let's consider a C-Corp. And then the tax strategist or the accountant says, no, C-Corps are double tax. We don't want that. They may not be aware that there is an exemption within a C-Corp when you exit where you can get up to 10x the amount that you invested exempted from capital gains tax because they don't know that you want to exit in 10 years. They don't know that. So because of those type of things, we have one conversation that we keep the goals in the front, not just my area of expertise. We're leading with the goals. When you lead with the goals and you lead with the plan, and now we can keep every professional in alignment with the plan, that conversation is very simple for you when we have it. We're just running down that. This is what we're going to do to minimize the taxes this year and over the next 5 years. I've already talked to the CPA. They know all they're going to be waiting on is K-1s or financial statements. This is all we need. Just make sure you get it over. All of that type. It's just one conversation. Multiple conversations becomes challenging for an entrepreneur when they're also trying to grow a business and focus on their internal operations. My wealth is a business, but I can't manage two businesses at one time to full capacity.
Can you talk a little bit about, if someone was to think about it, making it real practical and sort of chopping it down for us, what would be the basics of the things that someone would have? You've talked a little bit about an investment plan, you know, something in, I guess, the income space, an income plan. Mm-hmm. There's a tax plan. There's an estate plan. And then I don't know if this is this bucket, but I call it a family plan. Like if there you have folks, you know, there might be people with special needs or someone getting ready to retire. How are you going to manage these, you know, human components of the family that play into your wealth? I don't know how you think about that, but for our listeners, if they were thinking like, okay, if I was to think about my world as a business, what would be the components I would have in place that would drive that business?
You listed them all perfectly. You have your income plan, your investment plan, your tax plan, your estate plan. But I also call that the business plan because we see family as a business. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about business planning, we're talking about getting the next generation prepared, the succession planning of it. But the last leg I would add is the philanthropy plan.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
To whom much is given, much is expected. And if you have been fortunate enough to do right by stewarding your resources and that blossoms into a full harvest that you can enjoy and next generations can enjoy, you also have to think about how to sow back into the kingdom. So you have to have a plan for that. And there are some tax benefits to that as well. But you want to have that plan, and you'll be surprised the person in your family that may be in charge of your philanthropy activity, the one that you think, like, she's too nice and she just does all this great stuff, or she just lets people do that. She might be the one that needs to be over some of the infrastructures that people use for their philanthropy activity, like their nonprofit organizations, their private foundations, things like that. That may be the person that should be head of that. But that would be the last plan that I would certainly add to that. You need all of those, and it may sound like a lot. But the first step is really just getting with a professional to help you assess where you are.
Yeah, but pretty much everybody, right? If someone's just starting, so let's go back to, since Julia always likes to pretend she's, you know, she tries to play the novice when she's out there crushing it. But like, we'll just pretend that the Julia pretend person, you know, you could just have a job and you could have an income plan around increasing your income from your job or from anything else that you're doing on the side. If you have a 401k even, you have an investment plan. If you have any money invested in anything, it might just be in your house. It might be in your rental property. It might just be that you got a 401k at your job. That's an investment plan, how you invest that money, right? Everybody pays taxes, so everybody got a tax, needs to have a tax plan, right? And then you start to think about, okay, well, do I have a will? Do I have a medical directive? Do I have an estate plan? Do I have a purpose? You know, we talk a lot about, Kelvin, about big why. Like, do I have a purpose of what I'm trying to achieve and what I want that vision for my family to be? And then whether I'm giving $100 to my local charity or I'm participating in the blood drive or I'm giving money at church, these are all philanthropic activities that might be part of that overall why, right? Like, how am I implementing how I want to show up in this world? And so there's no opting out of that plan. Those plans aren't optional things you do when you somehow get enough money to do them. It's just that the very rich have a lot of resources to make those plans, and they might have more complex plans in those things. But we all have a plan, or in the absence of a plan, we got a problem in those different areas.
I want to play devil's advocate just a tad bit here, just a tad bit. We are a lot further as far as our earning potential and financially than we receive credit for. Although, you know, we still have large disparities in certain things like home ownership, income rates, and things like that. There are a lot of us making a lot of money that's still operating like we're not. And those are the ones that I want to speak to, because we have a very unique opportunity here to take our power back. And if this political environment hasn't showed us enough that self-sustainability should be the purpose for everybody, no one's coming to save us. So don't think small. You know, like, we cannot build a tower on a foundation laid for a one-story home. The smaller you think, the less you're going to achieve. Yes, these are all plans that everyone is required, but you're making more money than you think. You have more wealth to protect than you think. You have more people in your family that's doing great things than you think. You just have to take a step in and get it assessed. That's our process. For first-generation wealth creators, they usually do are somewhere in the upper six figures. When it comes to entrepreneurs, they usually are also six or seven figures, because they realize, you know, that they're making money and need to do things. But it's a process. You get that wealth assessment first, because there's so many gaps in our wealth management that we don't realize. Those are the ones you just listed. You're doing these things, but are we doing them to maximum efficiency? So we have to identify those gaps and build a blueprint to help fill them. And if you decide to get them filled by our firm, there's phases to that. Phase one is protection. My brother, I was the youngest, so I got a different type of aggravation growing up. But my brother, he was a Golden Glove middleweight boxing champion. He required his sisters to know how to fight, guys. It was terrible. He required it. But in our daily lives, as we're moving about, he would just come up, sneak behind you and just, bam, one good body shot. He wouldn't hit you hard, but it was just enough, you know, to make you flinch a little bit. And you're like, why are you doing this? And what turned out to be aggravation in my childhood turned out to be one of the principles that our firm stands on. Because he would always say, see, you got caught with your hands down. Keep your hands up and it won't happen. So now protection is the first place that we start in planning, because we don't want anybody to get caught with their hands down. Nobody can get caught with that. We have to have an estate plan that's not reserved for just wealthy people. It's a requirement. Or are we going to go from paycheck to paycheck to probate? Mm-hmm. We have to have estate plans. We have to have some form of growth strategy. Like if we are only focused on what we earn on a week to week, our personal economies are never going to thrive. They have changed our perspective on how we earn money. We break it down. Oh, I get paid this amount per week. Well, think about how much money is going to touch your hand over 5 years. And then break your plan down that way. Think bigger, think higher, think broader from a bird's eye view. How much money am I going to touch over 5 years? If I'm making $50,000, that's $250,000. How can I keep my expenses to $100,000 of that so I can strategically break down the $150,000 over the next 5 years? Think. It's all about perspective. We don't want to think small. We want to understand that we are capable of more. We're already doing more. Is your listeners are not just, oh, this is too big for me. No. We don't have a choice. We have to think like this. You don't have a choice. You don't have the say-so to, or the opportunity to turn this off and say, this doesn't apply to me. We don't have that choice anymore, that luxury. So I just want to encourage the bigger thinking and understand that there's a process. It's like, and if you go through the quicker you go through the process, the quicker you can know where you stand and you can move accordingly.
I love that idea about the process, because we all want it. We just don't want to go through the process. We want to get it. We just don't want to go through the process. And when you say the process, that makes me think of the fact that this is not immediate. This is going to be a plan that's going to take you out for a period of time. And I actually, the thing with when you said, and this is the way I just related, the question becomes, are you living bills, benefits, or legacy? And that's the way I look at this process of what you're talking about. Are you leaving bills, benefits, or legacy?
Now, because we're running towards the end of our time, Lavasia's been dropping little seeds all along the way, and I don't know if people are picking them up. You said a number of things. You talked about tithing. You've talked about certain things. And I actually heard a video you did that said something to the tune of most successful businesses are operating off of biblical principles. I can tell you are, because I've heard several things that you've said. Just really briefly, do you want to touch on that at all? Because what a lot of people don't know is that Keller Williams operates on biblical principles.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any debt. We are required to pay our debt all off by the end of the month before you can transmit, et cetera, et cetera. How do you think that ties in to this conversation?
Oh, in so many ways. I have quite a few favorites, as people will hear me say time and time again. My first one, of course, is the Proverbs 11:14. Like, where there is no counsel, the people will fail. But in abundance of counsel, there will be victory. That's who your professional team is. That's your counsel. Mm-hmm. That's who's going to get you through these things that you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. Another in an entire book, and I say it, but I'm always scared to say it because it always comes out the wrong one, but Ecclesiastes
is one of my... Look at you, girl. Look at you. You did that. Yeah.
Yes. It's one of my favorite books, too, because it expresses the importance of diversification. Because we haven't been exposed and we're not capitalizing on our organized efforts, we can't represent ourselves like an institution. So our check writing power seems lower. So we don't get the opportunities for some of the advanced investments that's really taking wealth to the next level. And it's when we talk about diversification, we mean an institutional style diversification. Because concentration makes us rich. Diversification makes us wealthy. And we're so concentrated. All we know is real estate, start our own business, and stock market. And there's other ways to incorporate that into a portfolio, but at a higher scale, at a bigger scale. And the more we increase our check writing power, the more doors that open. Ecclesiastes, this definitely helps us express the importance of diversification. And then my very favorite is 2 Timothy, I think it's 2-6, or just 2 Timothy verse 2. And it says, the farmer should be the first to partake in his crops. I don't care how much money you're making, you pay yourself first. No one is going to show up for you like you. you paying all your bills first before you pay yourself, but you can't call them when you retire. You can't call them in a medical emergency. You can't call them when you have it set up for probate. You can't call Netflix, or you can't call your electric company and be like, hey, I paid y'all for 20 years. You might. It doesn't work that way. So you have to partake in your crops first so you can plant those seeds to harvest for later. So those are some of my favorites. I mean, we can go on and on, but those are definitely some of my favorites.
Well, I know we're kind of coming up on the end. I don't know if you have any closing thoughts. We spent a lot of time here at The Color of Money talking about a wealth building continuum that talks about how we trade time and talent for money, which is really your income, how we trade time, talent, and money for money, which might be your small business or a business you build or something you own, and then how we trade money for money, which might be a pure investment financial portfolio. And we talk about moving through those things and where we should be focused at different points, right? And having all those components, but focusing more in certain ones in different seasons and different times of our journey. I just wanted to remind our listeners of that, because so much of what you said talks about having that full continuum in place and not getting locked in just one spot in that continuum and not building across that full spectrum. What would be your one piece of advice? If you are somebody who, majority of our listeners are having success in real estate, they're making money, they're building businesses. Some are doing it at a very, very high level. Some are just getting started. But they're aspiring, I think, most of them to make a difference and to build wealth for themselves and for their families. If you had to sort of give people one tip, what would that be?
Oh, man. I'm going to slide two in there. Build your team and pick your right partner. I'm going to slide two in there because you are feet to the ground in it. Feet to the ground. Your team and your partner are your second and third set of eyes. Who you choose to build a life with and who you choose to counsel you will make all the difference. It doesn't matter how much money you make in this world, it's designed to take it from you. And if you don't have those people in place, you're just going to get robbed.
That's good.
So I couldn't say one. Yeah, I couldn't just say one. I needed those two. You know, we got two of everything for a reason. I want you guys to know that wealth management is no longer a luxury. It's a requirement.
And how do people get a hold of you, LaVeysia?
Yeah, so I try to make it simple for everything. So all platforms, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, is all my name, just under LaVeysia Davis. I'll also make sure you guys have the link to Supply, where you could just go to LaVeysiaDavis.com, which is a direct resource to tell you more about who I am and what I do and how you can book some time with our firm to see if you are in position to build your family office and take your wealth to the next level. And we also have a thriving community that's helping build family CEOs that are deciding to take that leap and take control and take their bulls by the horn and organize their family too. And that can be done at wealthandlegacy.com as well.
Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate everything you've said. And thank you, of course, Bo and Emmerich. And thank you for listening to the Color of Money podcast. We will join you next week, friends, for another fabulous episode with our great co-host and another great guest. Everyone, take care.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.